Let us therefore now concentrate upon these two verses. The problem of bondage and liberation is supposed to be the most important problem in Indian thought. No civilization, no culture in the world has been so concerned with the problem of bondage and how one can be free from the bondage. In fact, every system of Indian philosophy has most important element in the form of a discussion on this subject. There is only one system which does not deal with it, and that is Charvaka. Charvaka's theory is materialistic theory and does not deal with the problem of bondage and liberation, because it says that as long as you live, live happily, and after the body is burnt away at the cremation, what remains? There is nothing to remain, and therefore you need not need to worry about it at all. Apart from this philosophy, all the other systems of Indian philosophy regard the problem of bondage and liberation to be the most important problem. Buddhism, Jainism, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, Pura Mimamsa, Uttar Mimamsa, and Uttar Mimamsa is called Vedanta, and all the systems of Vedanta consider this to be the most important problem. To state the problem very simply, it can be said that there are two facts which are indubitable, which cannot be doubted. The fact is that every human being feels situated in a circumstance. To be in a circumstance is an indubitable fact. Nobody can deny that you are a circumstance. And everyone is required to deal with a circumstance. You are either comfortable with a circumstance or you are uncomfortable with a circumstance. Even when you are comfortable with a circumstance, you will wish that the same circumstance continues. And because there is a fear that it may not continue, you make an effort to see that the same circumstance continues. If the circumstance is uncomfortable, you try to say that it is removed. You either fight with it and change the circumstance, or you try to escape from it, to come out of it. Either of the two things happens while dealing with the uncomfortable circumstance. Now, both the conditions are conditions of bondage. The fact is that you are required to deal with a circumstance. This required, this is a very important word. You are required to deal with a circumstance is an obligation. An obligation is a sign of compulsion. Compulsion is a sign of bondage. You are bound to do it. You are obliged to do it. The Indian thought therefore assumes that there are two elements, the one which is subjective is called Purusha, and the circumstance is called Prakriti. These are the two elements which are supposed to be confronting with each other or wedded together happily or unhappily. And something has to be done in regard to these two elements. Now, the concept of bondage goes further. It is not merely a question of one confronting the other, but one finding oneself in the other is a further problem. It is as if one is found to be locked up in a prison. Confronting is one thing, it is also a kind of a prison, but a greater confinement arises because we feel as if we are locked up in the Prakriti. Without raising deeper questions, we only look at the psychology of this locked up condition. In what way are we locked up in Prakriti? To be locked up means that there must be a hook on which we are fixed. What is the hook in Prakriti on which we are hanged? And we find ourselves so much tied up that we cannot come out of it. The answer is that this Prakriti has three elements by which the Purusha gets locked up. Manaha, Buddhihi, Ahankaraha. These are three words which Sri Krishna speaks of in the fourth verse of the seventh chapter. These are three hooks, as it were, the mind, the intellect, and the Ahambhava. These three elements are themselves conscious, but not sufficiently conscious. Our mind is conscious, but not fully conscious. Our intellect is conscious, but not fully conscious. Our ahamkara is conscious, but not fully conscious. Purusha, on the other hand, by its nature, is this conscious and fully conscious. Now, this fully conscious Purusha getting locked into three elements which are not fully conscious, as a result of which one feels as to the capacity to come out of it is adequate or not. Now, you compare this with the Paraprakriti. Purusha is basically a status of the jiva, of which mention is made in the fifth verse. Paraprakritir jiva bhuta, the origin of jiva is in Paraprakriti. And Paraprakriti has the capacity of unity, the unifying consciousness. It is fully conscious. A Paraprakriti, particularly these three elements, are inadequately conscious. Whereas Paraprakriti is fully conscious. Jiva, of which Purusha is a status, he is also fully conscious because his stuff is Paraprakriti. It is that by which the whole unity of the world is maintained. If therefore this jiva, or this of which Purusha is the status, which finds itself locked up in mana, buddhi and ahankara, if it can be brought out of this and turned into Paraprakriti, then jiva would have an equation, proper equation, which is adequate to itself. Jiva being fully conscious, Paraprakriti being fully conscious, the two immediately unite harmoniously. Whereas here, jiva which is fully conscious, whereas mana, buddhi and ahankara are inadequate in their consciousness. Therefore, the harmony between these two becomes very difficult. There is no synchronization. The problem is how to arrive at the synchronization so that you shift from here to there. And moksha consists in getting released from these inadequate hoops in the para-prakriti, lifting it up and entering into para-prakriti. Now these are only preliminary remarks in regard to the problem that you have raised. What is moksha?